Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Truth After Dark. I'm Schutz.
I'm Fiddler.
Tonight's episode is brought to you by the one and only Fiddler and Schutz Productions.
We have a great show for you tonight.
So stick around, everybody.
We think you'll have fun, as long as you don't get sucked in.
Welcome back to another episode of Truth After Dark. I'm Schutz.
I'm Fiddler.
I was going to say it again. I don't know why. I know who I am.
Are you? Do you really, though? You could be going through an identity crisis at the moment.
No.
Have your identity stolen by someone?
Hey, it's our season finale.
It is.
Episode 8, season finale. Hey, guys. Thanks for joining us. Tonight we have a slightly different show for you since it's the season finale. Like usual, we will tell you about a few conspiracies we found interesting, but there will be a twist.
We'd like to spoil you.
Only one will be fake. One created potentially to fool you, hopefully.
But you'll have to decide which one.
Well, at the end...
Don't spoil the surprise.
I won't. At the end, we will tell which one was fake. Ward is already in on this, so he can't be surprised any more than he already is.
I'm usually very surprised with everything you do.
Pretty much. So, I guess we'll just begin. The year was 1918. At first glance, it would seem it was a year to celebrate, or so people thought. It was the year that the infamous World War ended, changing the way humans saw one another from years past. But in the happiness, or as happy as one can be when their loved ones never returned, another cloud began to cast its shadow upon the world. It lasted 2 long years, affecting the already war-ravaged lands with no remorse or thought of anyone. An estimate of cases exceeded the staggering number of 500 million. In total, from the date of 1918 to 1920, a really inaccurate estimate of 7 to 100 million people passed from this disease. Most sources I checked said that the general number that's accepted is around 50 million cases. You know, of people that passed.
Yeah, actually, the Spanish flu itself killed more people than the entire war around the globe.
Very crazy. So yes, of course, like Ward mentioned, we are talking about the Spanish flu. During the trying time of the first wave and the ending of World War I, goods ranged in pricing. In the year 1918, a wool suit cost around $26.54. Cotton pants, $3.06. Cotton shirt, $1.31. For women, it was, you know, a little cheaper than a wool suit. So a skirt was $2.73. A cotton blouse was $1.58. And a cotton dress was $3.51. A loaf of bread was only 7 cents. A pound of butter was 36 cents. A dozen eggs was 34 cents. Sirloin steak, 20 cents or 25 cents per pound. And a quart of milk was only 9 cents. Could you imagine a quart of milk for 9 cents?
It's pretty good prices.
Extremely. A toilet cleaner was 19 cents. Toilet paper, 25 cents for 2 rolls. Which is weird because, I mean, it's not that crazy because you can buy like a regular single roll toilet paper for around like 75 cents, I think, at certain stores.
Yeah, but with the... Apparently, the Spanish flu didn't have the panic buying that we had during our pandemic.
30 bars of laundry soap was $1.73, and scoring powder for 3 cans was 14 cents.
Oh, wow.
Personal care, so regular soap, 30 bars was $1.59. Shampoo was 39 cents. Aftershave was 21 cents. And a haircut was only 65 cents.
What is that classic line? Shave and a haircut, 2 bits.
Yeah, I think 2 bits is like 5 cents, so...
Okay, so it's about...
A little prior probably to this time.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying, yeah. I wanted to mention what happened in 1918, but we were actually really here tonight to talk about a few conspiracies surrounding the dairy industry or things, like I said, related to the dairy industry. So, one of which dates all the way back to that fateful year... A year that is known for the ending of one epic and the start of another. During the First World War, the U.S. government needed rations to send to the troops on the front lines. Of what was needed was canned and powdered milk. To help the soldiers of their country, the farmers put a halt to anything other than the production of milk for the most part. They did their duty and supplied what the government needed. But when the war ended, so did the need for all of the milk that they were producing. Up to this point, the farmers had focused so much on their role to help that they now had an abundance of milk. This is where the conspiracy started, the well-known promotion of milk to America's youth to drink more of it.
Which is why we all have milk in schools now.
Strong bones, drink your milk.
Mm-hmm.
Remember all those? I actually remember one in particular of a Marvel comic book. I don't remember what it was, but on the back of it was actually Spider-Man hanging upside down with a frowny face milk mustache because
he's upside down. I remember something like that. It's awesome. Actually.
I love it. Those random memories like that you remember.
But yeah, we would always at every single lunch period they would hand out just those cartons of milk. It's pretty much ingrained in society now.
It is. At first, the government did what they thought was best and started to buy the milk and cheese from the farmers, a whopping $2 billion worth. It helped to begin with, and they got rid of it all by sending it to the schools across the nation. In turn, the schools tried to sell and tell their students that 4 glasses a day was needed to help keep them big and strong to fend off enemies of viral or physical nature.
I thought that's what spinach was for with Popeye. Make both. Them big and strong.
Both. Milk and spinach at the same time.
Just make it put it in a blender and drink it through a straw. You'll be big and strong
milk,
in no
spinach
time.
Smoothie.
Sounds great.
But it wasn't meant to be, though. It began to be too much for the USA to afford. A system was put in place to adjust for this. The government decided to charge the farmers a fee to advertise milk as an important part of your diet. For the most part, this practice was continued to this day, including a big payout to Congress to keep the liquid moo in the list of their nutritional guidelines. Fun fact, nearly 60% of adult Americans cannot even drink milk.
Lactose intolerant?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I may be, but I like milk and cheese too much, you know.
See, a lot of that being lactose intolerant doesn't necessarily mean you can't drink or eat, can't drink milk and eat cheese, but it's more of like, do it in moderation so it doesn't ruin you.
This is Wisconsin. We don't do cheese and milk in moderation.
That is true. We just
we
consume
it. Yes.
And that's a visual you will have for the rest of your life, everybody.
It is. Thank you. For the most part, you can receive the same, if not more, of the nutrients from other sources, especially vitamin D from the sun. The next conspiracy theory started in the 1970s. It was a star-studded decade filled with funky, soulful music, gooey, cheesy fondue, and the despised Hawaiian pizza. Packaged food became very popular in this decade in the way of junk food.
Yeah, actually, there was a lot of junk food that I had never even known had
that started, then.
Started
it's crazy.
In the 70s.
Wild.
Like, actually, concentrate cereal was...
Which I would have never thought.
I mean, Kellogg's basically put it on the shelves in the late 1970s. Of course, we all know that cereal is not the healthiest option for you.
What? Cinnamon Toast Crunch isn't the best?
No, it's just not. And then there was something called...
It's got cinnamon in it.
Yeah, cinnamon's probably not healthy for you either.
Fair.
Unless it's in apple pie, and then it's totally okay.
Fair.
There's something called Banana Flip, which was... It made by snack food cake brands like Nickels and Mickey's, a yellow banana cake which was folded in half and stuffed with cream filling. So it looked like a cake taco. It was kind of
maybe
a
precursor to like
Twinkies, yes.
Or like a Zinger or something.
Yep, Zingers. Something called pizza spins, which I had actually never heard of in my life. But
that's
they
what
were...
you get after you eat too much pizza, Chuck E. Cheese.
They were crispy pinwheel-shaped snacks that looked like, tasted like pizza, had the pizza flavoring in them. So it's kind of like...
Like precursor to Bagel Bites, almost.
Bagel Bites, I was thinking more of like Bugles or something like that, or something like that, where they have the pizza flavoring to them, but they're just like a crunchy snack.
Okay.
And then actually, Hunt's Snack Pack Chocolate Pudding... started in the 70s. Really? And that is one of the most popular... Wow. It was one of the most popular things when I was growing up. I never liked pudding myself. But
I remember this now.
Yes. People apparently loved pudding.
That's it. Very interesting, actually.
Mm-hmm. And the precursor to Cheez-Its, which were called Tidbits, those were developed in the 70s.
Really? But
yes. Tidbits were basically, they were orange-hued Crispy Crackers.
Crispy Crackers, that's fine.
Yeah. Crispy Crackers. They were shaped like pellets, and then eventually, of course, Goldfish and then Cheez-Its overtook them in popularity.
Well, ain't that a cool tidbit?
It is as fantastic. It's probably about as bad a joke as me saying spoiled in the beginning, referring to milk.
Or you basically, yeah.
And something else, I got a couple of these, and I'll get back to you in a minute.
That's all right.
Called Toastettes, which were basically Pop-Tarts, but like the start of Pop-Tarts. And apparently, like, people liked them more than Pop-Tarts.
It's probably because they had lead in it and mercury.
Nope. Yeah, lead and mercury usually flavor.
Mercury is that filling.
Pop Rocks started in the 1975. Very interesting. Ding Dongs by Hostess actually started in the 1970s.
That's cool.
They disappeared briefly, but they are happy and healthy back on our shelves today.
Well, happy. I won't
happy anyway.
I wouldn't particularly say healthy.
Cool Whip started in... It was actually in the late 1960s, but it got really popular into the 1970s.
Close enough. I wonder if they put those on their... What'd you call them? Banana? Banana flips?
Yeah, those. Cool. Yeah, just take a banana flip and dip it in Cool Whip.
Banana flip a Cool Whip.
Could market that.
We definitely could.
And Hubba Bubba gum, that long bubble tape thing, whatever. That stuff was developed in the 1970s as really? Well. And actually, so TV dinners were invented in the 50s, but they actually really took off in the 1970s.
I can see that.
Which, the 1970s, a lot of homes became dual income, which meant mom had less time to cook. So TV dinners were incredibly popular
at
that period of time.
I wonder if they were still metal at that point, because I know that originally it was like actual metal tinfoil trays.
I think 70s is more of a plastic era, but I'm not really
sure. I believe so, yeah. I believe you're correct on that, yes.
Hamburger Helper actually was popular in the 70s as well.
Really?
That kind of goes along with the TV dinner thing, where it's just easy. Mom didn't very have to. She could go off to her secretary job and come home and didn't have to cook an entire casserole. Just throw Hamburger Helper on the stove and it's all good.
Hamburger Helper is pretty good.
Yep. The Reese's Pieces actually took off, and although the movie E.T. made them very more famous.
Actually, the E.T. helped keep them on the shelves.
Yeah, on the shelves. But they were actually invented in the 70s.
Interesting. Okay.
And McDonald's Happy Meal actually developed in the late 1970s.
Did you ever get the Mighty Kids meals?
Mm-mm. I never did a lot of fast food when I was growing
up. So my parents, they did quite a bit, and I remember the Mighty Kids meals. That's where it was at. You didn't get a kids meal. You get the Mighty Kids meal.
Ooh, it was special.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, with the Happy Meal, it was just a burger, small fries, a packet of cookies, and a toy. It wasn't a lot.
They got cookies?
They got cookies.
What?
See? Made them happy.
That's disappointing.
You're not happy because you didn't get cookies, exactly. So you should have had a Happy Meal.
No, they didn't have cookies, and like, they probably stopped that after a while.
They didn't have it in your ultimate kids burger meal or whatever?
No, they're probably just like, it's getting too expensive, we can't keep giving kids these cookies. We'll give them the 5-cent toys though.
Yeah, we'll just give them a soda instead of cookies, and that'll get their sugar.
Even it out, yeah.
Yeah, it'll even out their sugar intake.
Well, this conspiracy theory doesn't involve those things in particular, but it can be connected in some way. Milk is the key focus of this one, primarily the codes eventually found on the cartons or jugs. Expiration dates were a new thing that was implemented to guarantee the freshness of the items you purchased. But that wasn't the only code you found. The other was the location code. Certain ones stated what plants that processed the milk before it was shipped off to where the consumers purchased it. The theorized reason behind this was the fact that drug cartels were using milk to transport the steady stream of cocaine to the USA from South America. It was more well known that it was transported here by plane, bribing boats. You know, the plane routes were the most popular, well-known, most successful, and widely used, leaving out from Colombia and Panama to the southeastern part of America and Mexico. Milk, however, was a less-known way, but it was quickly discovered because of the lack of creativity when it came to coming up with believable location codes. They kept coming up with random ones that actually didn't lead anywhere, so they could mm-hmm. actually prove that they weren't from real processing plants.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, the milk dates actually on for a lot of the cartons. Those originated, and this is not the 1970s with the
this dates back. This goes with it.
This definitely goes back. So actual food they were more popular with on the 1970s to have sell-by dates added onto them, not just milk. But however, milk actually dates back into the 1930s with Al Capone.
He was
So he was a bootlegger. He did more of alcohol, not cocaine.
Yep.
But with the milk theory behind that, he popularized having expiration dates on milk, or more accurately, sell-by dates on milk. Because one of his family members got very sick from consuming expired or spoiled milk.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did is he actually went out and he was very advocate for trying to get a sell-by date on them. He actually went out and bought a milk processor called Metamore Dairies, and he lobbied the Chicago City Council to pass a law requiring visible date stamps on milk containers.
Which would help quite a bit with people not getting sick, yes.
Mm-hmm. People think, but that also can come into a, ironically enough, a different conspiracy. So according to Al Capone's grandniece, her uncle made over $100 million per year from bootlegging. But as Prohibition was nearing its end, Capone needed a better way to, you know, keep his, not just his business, but to keep his lifestyle the way he wanted it to without being shot at on a daily basis. So what he did is he wanted to get into the milk industry,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and because it was a legitimate business, he could make a lot of money for it. So, because of the war and the government monopolizing milk industry, everyone was drinking milk, especially mm-hmm. families with kids, because it was targeted for kids. The markup on milk was greater than that of alcohol, and so with the facilities used with illegal action for alcohol distribution, they could, after it was no longer needed, could be used for milk distribution.
Which kind of where Pablo Escobar got his inspiration for trying to smuggle cocaine in milk, because obviously Al Capone was, you know, prevalent in Prohibition, smuggling alcohol, so he kind of got inspiration from somebody he probably most likely looked up to in mm-hmm. a way. And all of this brings us to the last conspiracy. It is the fondue conspiracy. Almost a perfect segue, I think, with our last conspiracy theory. It is believed that the weird demand for fondue in 1970 was not natural, believe it or not. It was believed that it was started by the Swiss cheese mafia, so to speak. Switzerland has a long tradition of making cheese that dates back to the Roman Empire. Originally, over 1,000 types of cheese was produced there, but eventually major shortages threatened it all. Thus, the Swiss Cheese Union was formed, or also known as, and I'm going to not say this very well, the Genossenschaft Schweizerischer Käsesportfirmen.
Gesundheit.
Yeah. They start to whittle at the list of extensive cheeses that they produced to help with the shortages by taking over basically everything that had to do with cheese, i.e. exporting, and quality control. It was narrowed down to three, which I've never heard of two of these, Emmental, Sabrins, and Gruyere. The Alps is actually the birthplace of the cheesy sauce in 1930. Traditionally, fondue consists of half Gruyere and half Emmental. The Swiss push for the cultural OG liquid gold, kicking off the fondue conspiracy.
And fondue is actually popularized again in the 1970s,
which I mentioned.
Which is with the cocaine industry. So they were probably mixing in cocaine with their fondue, which is why it was so popular.
It was in the milk.
Yes.
And it was mixed with the fondue, making it to die for.
Mm-hmm. So that being said, with the fondue, it actually... the whole thing could have actually been a conspiracy where Pablo Escobar was actually working with the Swiss in order to the Swiss Mafia, in order to implement more of his cocaine into the daily lives of Americans, thus hooking them onto
the fondue
train. Yes,
all of this.
So all of that ties together, and it really just kind of explodes the society for milk in the 70s.
Cheese, fondue.
Mm-hmm. Everything related to milk because of the cocaine added into it, which would have Americans addicted to it.
It would. So, out of the three that we've done today, it's a little different than we normally do. Which one was your favorite to talk about? Which one do you think was the most interesting? Obviously, these ones have more truth to them than the normal conspiracy theories we talk about, so we can't really say that they're not really true, so... Except for one of them. So, which one was your favorite to talk about? Which one was the most interesting, you think?
Definitely the cocaine conspiracy.
It's very interesting, actually.
It was incredibly interesting. That one surprised me. Actually, I was truly not expecting that, but it makes a lot of sense. I mean, people were tripping out of their minds on acid in the 70s.
They did a lot of things
in the 70s. So that actually makes perfect sense. And it wasn't actually discovered until the very, very early 2000s. Because the conspiracy was so hidden that nobody actually knew about it when it was being smuggled in. Actually, a lot of unfortunate circumstances with kids becoming very sick in class and not really understanding what happened because they drank milk that was not supposed to be in there.
Yeah, they're not supposed to drink it. Obviously, we know that two out of three of these have pretty good substantial evidence of actually being real.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they hold water? Do you think that they
hold milk?
Yeah. Do you think that they're pretty much legitimate, like people say?
Absolutely.
You think that?
100%.
All right. Okay. Well, hate to break it to you.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Do you want to know which one was...
Please, fake? I'm in suspense.
Are you?
I am on my knees and toes right now.
So, I have to apologize. The cocaine one
was not real. No, not the cocaine one.
It was pretty creative, wasn't it?
I like that one a lot,
I'm pretty
yes.
proud of myself.
That one was a good one.
It's actually very creative. And it plays into the third one so well.
It does. Although, with everything with Al Capone and the milk industry, that is true.
That is. But the kids getting sick off milk tainted with cocaine is not true.
No, I totally made that up.
You did a pretty good job ad-libbing some of that.
I know I did.
So, we'll do this again for every season finale. That was fun.
Every season finale, we'll make up a new one. And then
I enjoyed
we can
that
let you
quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, we can decide on which one is fake and which ones are real. So,
everybody out there, all of our shadows in the dark, learning all these things from us, spread this conspiracy theory. Make it a thing.
Yes, that's how conspiracies start, is getting enough people to believe in them. Doesn't matter if it's true, all you need is belief.
Yep, it can just be the powdered milk conspiracy.
It could be. Powdered milk could be cocaine.
It definitely could be. So, go ahead and spread the word.
Spread the good word, everybody.
We thank you for joining us for this season finale of our podcast, Truth After Dark. It was a fun first season.
I enjoyed that very much.
Quite a bit. Quite interesting. So, we'll be back next week, or in 2 weeks. We're not going to actually, take a hiatus.
Screw that.
Yeah. We'll start right back up, but we actually wanted to have some semblance of seasons, so...
So we can actually put them on a CD and sell them to you. Shameless marketing.
Yes. And also go check out our other two podcasts, Cornfield, Wisconsin.
And 5-Minute Fables.
You can check all three out at our website, www.fiddlerandshoots.com. take a look. We got new logo as of today. We got a new logo for our company in general, our production company. Go look at it. You know,
don't judge it too harshly. We love it.
Well, yeah, it's pretty nice. I like it. So email us a conspiracy theory you want us to cover. You know, something you think is interesting, something you think is cool, something you want to know more about. Let us know. All right? Don't be like us. Mind those rabbit holes.
Or else you'll follow right in.